Hi everyone. I'm Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic, codependent person in recovery, apparently a human being, which I sometimes forget sometimes. So I did have to make notes. I'm not sure how long it's going to be, but we're just going to roll with it and see how long we go. So my sobriety date is the 23rd of September last year. So actually of today, I have 200 days. I got the alert on my phone. So I hit, this bicentennial thing, which is kind of cool. So I'm kind of like in that weird stage of, oh wow, I'm getting close to a year. I'm not even trying to think that far ahead, and I think that's half the problem, is not thinking far ahead. So going back, I'm from New Zealand. I was born in Auckland, the biggest city. I grew up in West Auckland, which is traditionally known as the hood. I was kind of the kind of more sensible one as a kid, but you know, growing up in that sort of environment, I was exposed to a lot of stuff, and I kind of got away with a lot, but you know, there's a lot behind the story. So I was born in Auckland. Both my parents, it was just my mum and my dad. I don't have any siblings. They weren't religious at all. I'll touch briefly on my ethnicity because I think it is important to my story. If none of you would look at it, sometimes if you don't look at me, you wouldn't know, but I'm actually quarter Chinese. I'm also quarter Indigenous New Zealand or Māori, and I'm also quarter New Zealand European. So I do identify quite a bit with my heritage and quite a bit. So yeah, I thought I would throw that one in there. But there was no immediate addiction in my family in terms of my mum and my dad. But if I looked outside now, there is addiction issues that were in my extended family and have always been there. I just never knew until I kind of came into recovery. So I guess kind of the big thing I want to start out is a big part of my life that I haven't actually shared about. I've shared it with a few people in this room, but not actually a lot, is I was born with an immune disorder. So when I was born, there was a chance that I wouldn't live. And so for me, I spent from 4 months until 19 in hospital. I lived in hospital. So that wasn't like the traditional childhood that I had. I basically couldn't live without, obviously you can't live without a functional immune system. So for me, my parents had no choice but to leave me in hospital for months at a time to try and figure out what was wrong. And I think that started something, a good chain in my life where a lot of pain does originate from. I do think that part of the life that I do want to respect that, because it is a big part of my story. Growing up with an immune disorder or having a life-threatening childhood illness, they said that I would never make it past 30, and I'm going to be 29 on some Saturday. So I'm pretty kind of stoked, and I'm sober, so it's kind of strange. But my childhood was pretty okay. I jumped around a lot. My mum pulled me out of school a lot into different schools. So I never really had that stability, and having no siblings, I didn't really fit in anywhere. I went to after school care and holiday care, but I didn't really have close friends because I was sick a lot. So I couldn't be around kids when they were sick, when they had the cold. I had to stay home from school, or I had to go into hospital and have treatment. So I moved around a lot. I may have lived in the same house, but I went to 4 different schools within the first 3 years of my schooling before my parents actually separated when I was 8, and my father moved away to another city. And that was a big thing. That was a big change, I think, for me. It was just my mum and my dad and I, and then suddenly this first, you'll notice a theme will start to emerge of geographical movement. This was the first someone moving started a chain of reaction. But eventually my mum and I moved to Christchurch, which is the second biggest city in New Zealand. I will say that it's not necessarily the place that I enjoyed living, but it is the place that I did call home and was the main place I spent most of my childhood and adult life. High school was, you know, for us, we do schooling for 13 years in New Zealand. So when I first came to high school, I know for me, that's when things started becoming really chaotic in my life. My mum had moved out of my life suddenly. I didn't know what to do, and I had to learn how to live with a father who was very distant and emotionally abusive. And suddenly I started acting out like crazy. Drinking was the first thing I went to before smoking. Drinking was the first thing. I remember my father's liquor cabinet underneath the sink. It would be hidden in the sink at the back, and it would be, you know, those bottles, and I would just go near them. I remember being 13 and just sitting there one night on a Friday night, just drinking, and I was by myself, and I sit there now. I'm like, wow, I don't remember. I just remember that being the start of some things starting to change. Briefly going to touch on one thing that kind of, yeah, I think between the age of my high schooling, between 13 and 17, I really started to engage in those bad coping mechanisms. You know, I really got into self-harm, was a really big thing. A lot of alcohol abuse, a lot of smoking, a lot of starting to get into those bad crowds. I went, you know, I started hanging out with the wrong people. And I'm small, I'm tiny, but I managed to fit in anywhere. I can be, you know, some people say sometimes a chameleon. I can easily suit, you know, the crowd. I can go up, I can be respectful when I need to, and I can be silly when I need to. But 14 would really be the age in which I really started acting out as a rebel. But through school, my school grades were fine. I was heavily bullied, and I was in hospital a lot. So I did suffer a lot in school, but I had some amazing teachers, and I do thank some of them that really saw a lot in me, because I was really sick at the time with just being in hospital a lot. But at the age of 17, I was actually kicked out of home. So I'd gotten myself into a good situation where I'd been drinking for days. And, you know, it was the last year of high school, and it was sort of the thing to do. Everyone was just kind of in that mood. It was coming on, because in New Zealand, of course, it's Christmas. So it's December in the summer. It started being this time of going into summer parties. And at the age of 17, on my last week of school, I was kicked out of home by my dad. And that was really traumatic, that there was an incident involved with my dad and I, where he became abusive, and I basically got kicked out of home even though I did nothing wrong. But basically that started the second geographical movement, which was I had to move in with my mother. But all through this time, the hospital stuff still pops up, and the reason why I do come back to it is because I look at this thing of how I got to where I am, and I was never allowed to, I'm trying to think of the way to put this, I was never allowed to hide, because of being in a hospital system and in a public health system. There were people watching me. You know, I would have infusions all the time and people watching me, but I started really starting to act out. Self-harm became a massive thing. My alcohol, I would show up to my appointments drunk all the time because I couldn't deal with it. I'd lost a few people in those sort of times. And I think I look back, and a 15-year-old is being put in a room with people that are dying from cancer, and you've got no idea. There was a lot of trauma around that sort of situation. But I do have to remember that hospital has saved my life. And there's a lot of things that I, you know, I sometimes look back and it's hard. But my last year of high school, yeah, I was placed in intensive therapy ordered by the hospital, after they kind of found out that I'd really started to slip down into depression. And I got that, you know, got sent to a psych in the hospital, and I got diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and all those things sort of coming out. And I remember straight after that psych assessment, me and my friend, we went straight out, and we were, you know, you only have to be 18 in New Zealand to drink. So it was pretty easy for us to just go in and be underage and get alcohol. And we were just getting pissed in town. And that was just kind of, yeah, it didn't really matter to me what people said. Or I remember that time when, oh, you've got depression, you've got this. Yeah, okay, let's just go and get pissed. And it didn't really matter, even with being told, you know, you've got medication to take, you've got responsibilities now. I started acting out still. It just continued on and on. So I've been in therapy since I was 15. I'm nearly, 30, so about 14 years. And then I sort of finished high school, and I tried really hard. I think I tried to do well in school, but it was difficult. And I always kind of knew that things would, I don't know how to put this, but I do remember at my graduation being there and a photo of me. And I do remember that I was drinking that night. And it was, I had to go with my mom and my dad, and I actually ended up being awarded a scholarship for university, and I was drunk. And I actually can't really remember a lot of that night now that I look back. And yet someone who I highly respected nominated me for it, and I do not remember shaking their hand at all. I finished high school. I took a year off. I was in the Christchurch earthquake, the 2011 one that destroyed my city. That was an incredibly traumatic experience to be a part of, and I'm not going to touch too much on it, but that was a really hard thing to lose an entire city in the space of 30 seconds. That was really difficult, but I decided that I wanted to stay and start university, which, when I started uni, I was just coming on 18. So I was kind of, I guess for some people, they're like, oh, you went so late. But for me, I thought I already went quite early. I didn't start acting out, I didn't go to those parties, those house parties initially when I started university. I was too scared because I didn't know anyone. None of my friends from high school went to university. I was one of the few. All of them sort of went into different fields. But within the first 2 years, it wasn't long until I think and about my second to third year when I really got into making friends that I started drinking outside of the house. Because before it was kind of easy to just drink with a few friends or at home. But now I was on campus a lot of the time. I was with friends. So it was so much easier to be drinking and be socially drinking. And I think that's something that I've noticed a lot is my drinking has been in times of celebration and in times of bad times. So that's been interesting to look at. I was typically the sober friend. I'm only 4'11" and 4'9". My apologies. I know I need to get this right. So I'm not tall, but I always thought that it was always my responsibility to be the sober friend, because I didn't like drinking. Even though I was the one drinking, I would say I wouldn't like it, but then I would be the one drunk at the end of the night. There'd be a lot of events leading up to my drinking. Depression, school grades, it would be anything that would be a chance to go near the bottle. Multiple activities to stay drunk, of course, preloading, vomiting, all these amazing things, different types of alcohol and controlled drinking there was just all these ways that I tried to control how I was actually consuming when I look back. I also started around this time to be I struggled with my sexuality. I was unsafe in places. I was under the influence a lot of the time. I just was very confused. And I think that's why a lot of my relationships and friendships were so short-lived, because I wasn't stable. My grades were average in university, enough to get into postgraduate. But I started to isolate once my friends left. My undergraduate friends left the university, and I was the only one who stayed on for a good portion of postgraduate. I actually started a thesis and I got my own office. And by this time, I was still drinking heavily. I was a weed smoker by then. So I was a smart girl that was smoking pot in her office and drinking in her office and doing all these illegal activities essentially in the office that I was not allowed to do around other staff and things like that. So there was a lot in that time. I was thinking about that before, just this office that I used to spend hours in. I would be drunk, high. I would come onto campus at 7 a.m. because that was my thing. I would have a routine of I would go to uni at 7, leave at 5, I'd arrive on campus, and then I'd immediately be in the drink, or I'd be smoking weed, and that would be it. So that would be my day. Study, come back out, go back and forth, back to the... It would just be that constant revolve round. But I did graduate university. I actually graduated 2019, so not that long ago. So I graduated just before the pandemic, but through the whole time, I had to deal with a lot more issues in the family. My mum sort of came around and came back, and she moved to Australia. So I started moving between New Zealand and Australia. The geographical movement comes up again, and I realize now I took my problems with me wherever I went. So, you know, they always say, like, look behind you, your shadow's there. My shadow was always there. Me flying on a plane 3 hours to Melbourne to my mum, only to go out that night and get drunk and then come back home, repeat that again, then go back to New Zealand and go back to school. You know, there were things like that. So all this time, I was just, I was just going back and forth between two places. And then, you know, my first sort of friends outside of university, I had one really good friend. And when we first met, it was disaster from the get-go. We immediately got along and started drinking, started drugging. It was my first friend, like serious friend that I'd had. What I thought was, to be around where I could consume drugs and because someone could help me. Because the other thing for me was, you know, I didn't really want to ask a lot of people. I wasn't the crazy one with all the other drugs, but alcohol was always a big one for me. So now I was kind of curious, like, let's do other things. So, you know, I made this friend. We were getting lines of cocaine, we were getting mushrooms, we were getting acid, we were getting everything. So I was really starting to get heavily into just drinking and drugging. I was still acting out. I was still trying to understand who I was. None of that had stopped. And especially when I would, you know, go overseas for 2 weeks, I would go on a bender for 2 weeks and then come back to New Zealand and try and get my shit together and go and teach and tutor students all the while. You know, I was still on benders and hungover from the plane ride and from being drunk and everything like that. So I was fully in the midst of my addiction at that point. Christmas of 2019 is something that stands out a lot for me. I had a party that was thrown for me, my first ever Christmas party, because I had never had a Christmas party before. Someone had thrown it for me, the person. And that night was one of the worst nights. My drinking and drugging went so haywire that I was so sick that night. I blacked out. I think I blacked out by 9:30, and the whole thing was, you know, a Christmas party for me to understand what it was like to be around a family, because I'd never had that before. Yet I ruined it because I was the one puking all over the floor. And yeah, so I thought, you know, you think that would be enough, and that was enough of an embarrassment for me. But that definitely wasn't. So we came into sort of, you know, what's now known as this pandemic life, which really was the hardest time for me, the pandemic. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a huge extrovert. So it was one of the harder times. And I had planned to do a lot of things just before the lockdown sort of happened worldwide. I actually had plans to be starting a new life in Australia, and that got cut, you know, obviously within a day. And I was stuck geographically in New Zealand. And I remember that day that I couldn't move, and I immediately went straight to the bottle, because the thing that I remember was, oh, the liquor store is going to close. Because in New Zealand, that's exactly what happened. Was I started drinking, then I was like, I've got to go to the liquor store because they're going to shut the shops. And turns out they did. And during that time was probably, I can kind of talk about it now, but I really was in the start of the end, I guess. I look at it with, along with that night of Christmas, of just the pandemic, a specific night I remember really of being so drunk and so hungover and so sad, and I really did want to take my own life at that point. And I knew that it would be so hard and simple but easy. And I remember sitting up at that night, and I had nobody to talk to, and it didn't matter that there were people in the house with me, that I was still tempted enough, and I ended up, you know, calling lines and things like that and hospital and whatever. But that really was, you know, I was really in the throes of my addiction at that point, and the alcohol being consumed and the depression and just the stress of this that pandemic time just really did a massive number and really got me into a point where I was ready to die. You know, I wanted to be the closest, someone said, the closest to death without dying. And that's kind of what I was looking for, was just, I was done with the world. I didn't want to be here. And the only thing that did stop me was the fact that I didn't want my parents to find their dead child. Because I nearly wasn't supposed to make it till 30. So January of last year, I had the opportunity to move to Canada. I was in a long distance relationship for a long time, and we had a chance finally to be together. And I came across the world, packed up all my stuff, and geographically moved again, and took my problems with me on a plane. And yeah, middle of the pandemic, I knew nobody. Still don't really know anyone in the city of Vancouver, if I'm honest. And I've been here now for nearly 18 months, but you know, this pandemic still exists. So it's been interesting since I moved here, the experience of how I've had to adjust, you know, to fully moving across the other side of the world, which I'll get into in a bit. But what brought me into AA was July of last year. It was a really odd night, and I still don't believe it's real, but I mean, I know it is. I'd gone to a friend. I'd made one friend in Canada so far before I'd obviously found AA. And I went to her house and she said, "Do you want to come around for some drinks?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." And she brought her alcohol down and she brought out like the shot glass and then her drink. And she poured her alcohol into the shot glass and then the shot glass into the drink. And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm just looking at how much we're drinking." I'd never, ever seen that in my entire life of someone measuring out their alcohol. And that was, I remember that night and just been going, that's so weird. I tried to do the controlled thing of, okay, let's do the shot thing. But eventually I got up and I grabbed the entire bottle and I downed the entire bottle. And I managed to get myself back home. And then I ended up falling down really quite hard and getting in terribly on the side of my bed, and had gotten a black eye and a bit of a head thing. And the events of that was just, I remember the black eye. I have memories of the black eye. I remember falling and I remember getting into bed, and I don't remember. I woke up the next day at 2 p.m. and that's really it. And I was hungover. So that was really what, you know, was the start of me starting to see things. I'll also touch on one thing here. A similar situation had happened with my aunt, and she'd gotten sober through it. So it was kind of weird now to look back and go, the same similar incident of falling down and hurting oneself kind of made me aware of a few things. So, but as after that event, I started drinking more consistently. That didn't stop. I thought that would have been the start of me slowly drinking and moderating my alcohol, but it didn't. I didn't think that my alcohol use was the issue. I could justify it and rationalize it. I moved across the world. My partner and I are having issues. I have no friends in Canada. I miss my parents. I'm trying to be, it's a pandemic. I would find any excuse to justify my behavior. You know, there's notes in my journal of me noting that I was consistently day drinking. That was a really big thing that became the norm, was my day drinking just went off crazy. And about a fortnight into my, after I'd fell and hurt myself, that my therapist had said, "Well, I should try AA. And I went, fuck no. I went, no. And I will say my bias came from my stepmother, who was in recovery, and I didn't want to be like her. I thought that she was stuck up. I thought that all these things, and I thought really wrong. And, you know, I just didn't want to be like her. I didn't want that. I didn't understand why I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It didn't make sense to me. But September, you know, I realized that I'd probably better start and listen to my therapist, who had said, you know, just go and have a look. So you know, I there were a few in-person meetings that were starting to pop up again after the pandemic in Canada. I drove down and sat and watched some people go into a women's meeting, and I just couldn't go in. I sat in the car and I couldn't go in. I think I went about four times, and then I thought, you know what, let's try Zoom. Okay, maybe there's a thing that will work. And I actually found a Vancouver queer meeting that I could attend and started going online. I made the commitment that I would go once a week because it only ran once a week. And I didn't speak my first meeting. I think I spoke in my second meeting and introduced myself and just said hi. because I was still drinking. That's the other thing, is that September 23rd was my last drink, but of course I had come into AA still with the desire to stop drinking. But yeah, I found that group and I started going to this meeting once a week. And I started getting sober through Zoom. I started listening to these people. 2 weeks after, I went and into an in-person meeting. I was so petrified and it still wasn't comfortable. But I got a sponsor. I literally went up to someone that shared something at one meeting and went, okay, I kind of like, all right, I can relate to you. And I went up to him and said, do you mind if you sponsor me? And he said yes. So I started to open that door of AA. It's kind of funny because there's been little things through that little step. I started to go to a home. I got a home group in Vancouver. I would start going 2 to 3 times a week. I'd go on weekends when I knew that some people would be there who I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't see during the week. So I started to do this whole, the in-person sort of thing. So for me, I kind of found it like, it was difficult because the in-person meetings I still wasn't comfortable with. I got sober through Zoom. You know, the in-person meetings I went to really didn't kick in until at least 3 months into my recovery. Because I just wasn't comfortable. I just really wanted to stay in Zoom. I didn't want anyone in the entire city of Vancouver to, or even Canada or the world, to know that I was going to these meetings. I was so ashamed of going to these meetings. So yeah, like my experience of I'll touch briefly on the sort of conventional AA. You know, I did conventional AA. I don't mind it. I didn't have a problem with religion necessarily when I entered into AA. However, I did have a bit of religious trauma at a certain age where that kind of did a bit of damage, and I could put it to the side for a lot of time. But then once I found AA intergroup, that's when things really changed. You know, I'd done the steps conventional, so I had done them. You know, I got that whole down packed, but I'd started looking, going back to Zoom, and AA intergroup came up, and I found this meeting called a secular meditation, which is my home group. And you know, I was like, what is this meeting? What does secular mean? So I logged in, and I was like, whoa, this is different. There's people swearing and there's no God talk and anything like that. And I went, okay, I can get behind it. So I started going to this secular thing, and I didn't understand, you know, I went off intergroup. So it was simple meetings that I'd been to that had the same time every day. And I went, okay. And I started to really drift away from my traditional meetings. And I think that was a bad thing. It just happened to me. You know, during my traditional time, I went to multiple meetings online and in person. I went to I've done the 24-hour traditional meetings. I've been to a rehab center for men, and I was one of two females in the room. You know, I did a lot in especially in the first 3 months when people were telling me just to get phone numbers, and my sponsor was chasing me every day and making sure I do the 3 things to be grateful for and things like that. I really tried to follow a lot of what was suggested. There wasn't necessarily the thing of about service and things like that, but you know, there were things there that were keeping me occupied rather than drinking, you know, reading the AA book, you know, planning to go to your next meeting, things like that. It did keep me sober. But then, you know, I hit, I think it was late November, and I really just kind of, I'd had enough. I found enough meetings, and I found the wonderful spreadsheet that's like 600 pages long of all the secular meetings. And I went, oh shit. Okay. So I literally just went, okay, I stayed sober through Zoom. I'm a Zoom baby. All right, let's just forget about traditional for a while. Let's just try secular. And I immediately jumped at it. And I think since November, you know, I ended up getting a planner and writing down meetings. I've just gone to as much secular meetings as I can. Since finding secular, I attend more meetings now. I even looked at today, I can be in a meeting, in four meetings a day. Not because I have a desire to drink, but because I simply don't mind the fact that I like Zoom, and I like the AA Zoom, and the fact that I can come into a meeting anywhere. Since finding secular, I found that I can get stuck into service so much easier. I don't have to feel pressured by, you know, people to do a certain thing or be a certain way. I can just play in a simple, easy as that. It's just the confidence that I found from there. Getting stuck into service was something that wasn't advocated for really by my traditional sponsor, which was sort of, I think his sort of opinion was, you know, you need to wait until you've got about, you know, 9 months up before you can really start getting in the middle of service. Whereas when I came into secular, it was get in the middle of service. Just the service keeps us sober. Service keeps you sober. Just do it. Just do it. So that's what I started to do. I just went, okay. And then, yeah, since I've come into secular, I even have gone into another fellowship, which is obviously, like I said before, Codependence Anonymous. I started my own meeting in there. It's been since November. I've just been coming to meetings a lot, and I've tried to make it a thing with my recovery. I'm going to slowly start to wrap up, but I think I made a big thing with my recovery is the Zoom thing for me was about connecting to people wherever they were. Like, I loved the fact that I could go into Zoom in Australia. You know, I go to Secular Melbourne, I've gone to all these other ones. Can go to one back home or wherever. And I think for me, it's that geographical thing about me moving around and bouncing around, where I still want to keep people around me. And I think that's why I've appreciated the Zoom room so much, is because I can take the Zoom people with me. I can take you guys with me. The biggest thing for me since I've come into this room, I will say in the past 3 months, probably since the start of the year, is a massive change in my recovery. I do think, you know, it is kind of weird to say, but I do think that secular has been the best thing for me, to put the God stuff aside, just not have to deal with it, because I wasn't raised religious. I don't need to deal with it. It's not my personal thing. But since then, I've just gone nosedive straight into recovery. Because I truly enjoy it. I don't enjoy it all the time. I've had temptations to drink. I've been depressed. I lost my relationship quite recently as well. So I'm still going through that. And I had a few cravings to drink and use and all that stuff. But the biggest thing for me is the fellowship. You know, there's a saying in New Zealand, what is the most important thing? The people, you know, it's you guys. It's been a hard thing to sort of take a step back from when I was starting to write this morning, just what I wanted to include and how to express the fact that my sobriety is such a big thing, but it's so small at the same time. The fellowship is what's kept me sober. And I think that's why I always had a problem with the higher power stuff, because it always, in traditional meetings, was that, oh, it had to be God. Well, I believe that people who have, like my ancestors, have come before me and have some answers that I probably don't know, or that, like you guys have been in this room longer than I have. And so you guys might have an idea that I might need to listen to, you know, and take it in. And I think that I've really tried to, I don't like the word embodiment, but I guess that's the only word I can come up with off the top of my head, is like to just do, I don't even know. I'm trying to think of the right word. Best thing for me is the fellowship, because the fellowship has kept me sober. It's when I, especially when I first started in AA, all my friends now, everyone messaging me is in recovery. You know, that's a really strange difference. I don't feel so alone anymore. It's been a really hard road to open. My step four was a pain in the ass. I really didn't like it. And that, you know, that was in conventional AA. I'm still going to do it in the secular style, but step four was hard. Step four really showed me that I had a lot of maladaptive behaviors, bad coping mechanisms, bad ways of doing things that really were just harming myself and other people. I thought I was a really good person, and I still don't think I am at a lot of the time. But it was really an eye-opening experience for me to do the steps and to see that, you know, there is a lot that I actually need to work on and to transform into trying to be a better person, because it's been, I've always wanted that. I've always known that there's always more work to do in my head with how to be a better person. But since I've come into sobriety, I really see what I can do for me and what I can do for other people. You know, that's why I love service so much, is, you know, I get a lot of enjoyment out of it, but I get so much more about just helping and just being able to say hi to people and check in and just say, hey, what, you know. So yeah, I think there's really not much else I kind of want to say. I think the main thing is, since I've come into Tasanua, a secular meditation and all night place, these rooms, and these, you guys that are in this room right now, like I don't want to cry, but I might. And it's just amazing to see so many people here that I really love and care about. You guys are my family, like my family of origin. Don't get me, I don't really talk about my sobriety game because I don't really understand, but you guys fucking get it. And I don't have to explain my entire thing to help, you know, you guys just get it. And I'm so grateful. It's so nice to just feel like I fit in. I can explain and cry, and I can ring someone at 12 a.m. and maybe they'll answer and maybe not. I can just go on in a meeting and whatever, but it's the fellowship that's kept me sober. It's learning that you guys have done this one day at a time and I'm only just getting started. So I love every single one of you guys. I could say one thing about each and every one of you, but I'm sure that I will take up more than enough time doing that. But I just can't thank you guys enough, and for keeping me here, because I can't run away, because I don't ever want to run away. I always want to run to you guys, because you guys are my family. So love you.